I used to dance at a place called the Wiener World.
Wait a minute. Everybody, welcome to another episode of the Wrestling Archives Podcast. I'm your co-host, Tim Hackman.
And I'm your co-host, Rich Sigwald.
Thanks for being with us. We're happy to be here and talking with you today. We got a good show for you today. First, to just maybe check in. I know we just wrapped up WrestleMania a weekend or so ago. I think this is our first show since WrestleMania. What is this, number 30, 40? 40.
40. 40. Come on, man.
Good Lord. Yeah, I know. A big two nights. Cody finally finished his story. Any thoughts on WrestleMania this year, Rich?
I thought it was a pretty decent show. I thought they really pulled one together. It didn't seem as sluggish from the bits that I was able to watch, because I went out to Ohio and watched the solar eclipse. And I do have to tell you that the solar eclipse was better than WrestleMania. It was probably way better than attending WrestleMania, where it was about 35 degrees at the main event time on the Saturday night. And my wife's cousin was there, probably freezing her biscuits off. But from the few photos that she did share, it looked like she had a good time. But anyways, I thought WrestleMania this year was particularly good. I enjoyed it. I had some surprises, some twists, and some fancy cameos in the main event, and a lot of hugging.
A whole lot of hugging. It was a kinder, gentler WrestleMania. Yeah, no, I agree. I thought it was actually a really good show. There was maybe only one or two duds. I thought the Usos match was a bit of a dud, and that seems to be the consensus online from what I can tell. You know, I thought the main event both nights was good. I thought the match with Gunther and Sami Zayn actually was really good. The women's matches were excellent. Even that tag match with the ladders and stuff actually was remarkably entertaining. So, yeah. Anyway, I'm glad. I'm glad to pull together first, you know, WrestleMania of the Paul Levesque era. We talked a little bit about the idea of bringing him out as kind of a public face of the company. It seems. I'm with you. It seems like a little bit too much of a pulling back the curtain. But you know, we'll see.
For the champion to welcome and invite like the head of creative to the ring to thank him for this opportunity, it's not like he's thanking the boss for making him champion. Like, well, thanks for just revealing the whole thing is fixed, right?
Kind of
that's where that whole celebratory thing kind of jumped the ship for me. I kind of like that feeling of like all the other baby faces coming out and putting them on the shoulders and stuff like that. That was kind of nice and reminiscent of previous WrestleManias. But at the same time, once you start inviting Bruce Pritchard and Triple H, you invite the front office down. And the top floor of the skyscraper down to the ring to thank them. You've broken that. You've broken kayfabe in that point, I think.
Here's Jan from marketing. I was actually I didn't mention this to you, but I was watching the pre-show and Big E was talking about one of the matches coming up, and I don't remember which one. It doesn't really matter. But what he was saying was basically that, like, you know, you got to go out there. Oh, it must have been about LA Knight, maybe, about how you got to go out there and, you know, prove to the company that you can perform and draw. And he was talking about it like, yeah, if you do well, then they will put a championship on you, as opposed to like, you got to go out there and try your best and win the matches. And then if you win the matches, you'll be rewarded with, you know, climbing up the ladder. Like, and everybody knows that's not how it works anymore, but also, you don't necessarily have to just come out and talk about it like that. You know what I mean? Like, it was a weird little like moment that I didn't necessarily need. But somebody somewhere must have approved that kind of like approach, right? Like they wouldn't just come out and say, "Oh yeah, this is how wrestling works now."
Right. It's kind of, it is kind of a weird approach to it. But like it's also harkening back to our previous discussion about how WWE has recreated kayfabe by making it real. Right? Like everything that you see now takes place in the WWE universe, and that even includes AEW at this point. AEW is like a weird thing that happens also in the WWE universe now because of the way they handle things and the way the talent has jumped back and forth, and that has been used by both companies as an angle. It's a very fascinating approach, and it makes me excited for what WWE is doing these days. And I was just like having like a shower thought about like AEW, because like they're doing the exact opposite kind of thing, to where your record counts, like your win and losses always count. And with that makes the only thing that ever matters is the championship then. And then so you can't have really any kind of either side quests, I guess you want to call them. But like, so like you can't have feuds between people. So you don't end up with a Hulk Hogan versus Sid Vicious main event at a WrestleMania version of something in AEW, because technically everybody just has eyes on the championship and therefore nothing else matters.
Yeah. Well, and they don't do stories, right?
Like, that buries any storytelling that they can do, you know?
So anyway, well, we hope you caught our WrestleMania 40 preview. Put it out just before the show. You can go back and take a listen to that and see how right or wrong we were. I think we were pretty good. I think we called quite a few of them. I think we missed. There was a big one that we missed, but that doesn't matter now. But yeah, take a listen. I thought it was a decent episode.
Yeah, I think we were waffling on Gunther and Sami Zayn. But it was more on along the lines, well, if they're going to do it now, this is where they're going to dethrone Gunther so that he can shift his eyes onto one of the world championships instead of holding the Intercontinental title, because that dude is on his way to the top.
Yeah, I hope he will find his way into a program with either Cody or Seth, or whoever's next.
Damian Priest, I guess.
Damian Priest, right? Or Logan Paul, I guess. Yeah, whatever. All right, so let's get into today's episode. This is a special one. We got a request from our buddy Nick. We haven't heard from in a little while. One of our devoted Facebook followers. Nick, we appreciate you listening, and we appreciate you sending us your comments, your requests. Nick wanted us to take a look at the Royal Rumble from 1990, which is a fantastic show. We've both seen it before, but we haven't talked about it on here. Coming to you from January 21st, 1990, from the Orlando Arena in Orlando, Florida. Attendance is a suspiciously round 16,000. No pay-per-view buys available for this one. Tagline is "Every Man for Himself," which I have to say is fairly uncreative. That's just basically a description of the Royal Rumble, but that's okay. And on commentary, we've got Tony Schiavone, who is way out of place here, Jesse the Body Ventura, Gene Okerlund on the interviews, and of course the inimitable Howard Finkel doing the ring announcing. This is the third of the Royal Rumbles. I don't know, Richard, you want to talk a little bit about how we got to Royal Rumble in 1990?
Yeah, so this is the third Royal Rumble, but it is the second Royal Rumble that is a pay-per-view. And so the Royal Rumble is a match that was invented by Pat Patterson. And they initially tested it at a house show in 1987, but then they did a real one just a few months later in January 1988 as a TV special on USA. And that one was won by Hacksaw Jim Duggan. And then the next year they moved it to pay-per-view because it was such a hit, and they started using it as the setup to WrestleMania. That has always been the purpose of the Royal Rumble, was to set up the WrestleMania. It wasn't quite as obvious in the beginning. That wasn't always quite the winner of the Royal Rumble gets the title match at WrestleMania, like it became after a few more years. But it did always, was always used to set up the storylines leading into WrestleMania. And that happens here. The Royal Rumble in 1990 sets up the main event for WrestleMania 6, which was Ultimate Warrior and Hulk Hogan. the Royal Rumble is just one of those magical matches, like War Games. It has very special meaning and special rules, and is honestly my favorite pay-per-view each year. I always look forward to it. And now that WWE also has thrown in a women's Royal Rumble match on the same night, it is exciting, because then I get to watch two of my favorite types of matches.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's still one of my favorites as well. I think there's just something about the spectacle of so many people in the ring at one time, and sort of the uncertainty of, you know, who's coming next and how will the number that they draw sort of affect, you know, how they do in the final thing. And then, of course, we could talk a little bit about when we get here, is, you know, the idea that this sets up the WrestleMania storylines for a lot of different ways, including, of course, the main event at WrestleMania. So that adds an interesting layer these days. So
this is an interesting time in WWE as well. This is, so as you mentioned, that Tony Schiavone is doing the commentary. That is because Tony Schiavone has jumped ship from Jim Crockett Promotion / now WCW, since it had been purchased by Ted Turner at this point. And was basically making everybody angry. Ric Flair is soon to be coming. Lots of other people from there is soon to be joining the party, including like Jim Ross and others. But at this point, really only Tony Schiavone has jumped over. I don't even think there's any like real WCW known like people that have jumped over to this card. So yeah, all these people you would associate with WWF at this point. And it is a hall of fame of names involving in this show.
It's crazy. It's like the superstars of wrestling video game roster plus some, actually. Like it's everybody that you remember from, you know, if you're our age, your childhood watching wrestling are right there. I mean, really, the only ones we're missing are a few of the like the tag teams that came and went, like the Killer Bees and the British Bulldogs, who were gone by this point. But like, I mean, everybody else is there, really.
This pay-per-view is taking place like right after that No Holds Barred movie came out, and they had the No Holds Barred pay-per-view that went along with it as well, that actually did feature Hulk Hogan and Brutus Beefcake versus Randy Savage and Zeus in a cage match. So they tried to make it real. That might be a fun one for us to watch in the future at some point. I assume that's on the Peacock somewhere. It's got to be, right?
Yeah, it would have to be. The movie's on there, so I'd imagine the pay-per-view. I've never actually seen that one, so that would be a great follow-up to this one. Even if we don't end up talking about it, I may still watch it, actually.
Yeah. I just love this Royal Rumble, and while I don't like it as much as the 92 one where Ric Flair runs the gambit, but this one is great and really a spectacle of a showing by Ted DiBiase.
Man, that guy.
Let's get into the show though.
Yeah, for sure. There's a dark match that we don't see. It's Paul Roma. He defeats the Brooklyn Brawler, Steve Lombardi, the Jobber's Jobber. What a guy.
That dude, he always gets cut, but it's so...
I know. Seriously.
I was just reading something of how, like, Bobby Heenan gave him the idea for the gimmick of the Brooklyn Brawler.
Oh, really? That's too funny.
And it's based off... And Heenan was just like, you should wear a Yankee shirt, because the Yankees are the most hated team outside of New York. So anytime we leave New York, you're going to... instant heat, and then you should go outside and roll around in the dirt before the show, and so that it looks like you just got out of a tussle and you're coming into the ring to fight again. And it's like, man, Bobby Heenan, freaking genius.
Stop talking, you're too good.
Yeah.
No, he looks like when you would go to the Salvation Army and put together the hobo costume when you were a kid. I know I did. I don't know. I'm sure other people were hobo as kids. I'm sure that's fairly insensitive now, but I definitely looked a lot like the Brooklyn Brawler. Anyway, the first actual match that we get to see is the Bushwhackers.
I think we need to talk about the opening of this show, because the Royal Rumble pay-per-views back in the day had a very special opening.
Yeah.
And it was Vince McMahon screaming the names of every single person on the show. So that includes 30 people into the Battle Royal. And it's like, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Hulk Hogan, Roddy Rowdy Piper, Bad News Brown. Like, he is blowing his voice out. They've got to be like putting him like 10 feet away from the microphone and turning the gain all the way down just to keep him from just like blasting it out.
It's funny.
It's so obnoxious. And he does it. And it's every Royal Rumble for a long time of this era. And there was an awkward silence after he said Akeem.
Yeah.
And it made me wonder if they edited out African Dream.
Oh, I bet they did. Because they didn't mention it when he comes out to the ring later. If they did, I didn't hear it.
No, maybe they're not. He doesn't have that tagline yet.
Maybe.
But there was an awkward pause there in the opening. And yeah. And then the first camera shot in the arena we get is Jesse Ventura and Tony Schiavone, and Jesse Ventura is in Mickey Mouse ears and that quintessential oversized 1990 Mickey Mouse sweatshirt that, yeah, like, I swear everybody had.
Yeah, he's a champ. He looks great.
Yeah.
He's here to have a good time. He's not here for a long time. He's here for a good time. So the first actual match that we get to see is the Bushwhackers, Butch and Luke, of course, versus the Rougeaus, Jacques and Ramon. They're
the All-American boys.
Yeah. They've got Jimmy. Who's managing them? Jimmy Hart, right?
Jimmy Hart yeah, wrote that song, All-American Boys, for them.
That's too funny.
Yeah, so like the whole thing was they were trying to make the American fans like them more.
Oh.
And so they come up with this idea to start calling themselves the All-American Boys. And so they have the half Quebec, half American flag coming out. And, you know, America don't like immigrants, even if they did become Americanized themselves, you know. So, yeah. And so it's just a great, more great heat gaining by Jimmy Hart. Such a brilliant little song. And he has the Rougeaus actually singing it. So, like, they're singing all this stuff with a heavy French-Canadian accent. It's great.
Do you remember when Demolition was feuding with them and they called them the Ragu Sisters?
Yes.
That's great. So clever. Yeah, no, it's hard to imagine a more Canadian tag team than those two. Maybe like Dino Bravo and Jim Neidhart or something, but maybe, I don't know. Their dad was wrestling royalty as well in Canada, and they I think they got their start on his promotion. So the Bushwhackers are, you know, insanely over at this point. Kids love pumping their arms up and down. Like, they're just a couple of cartoon goofballs. Like,
this crowd is amped. I don't know if Paul Roma and the Brooklyn Brawler put on like a barn burner of a match that we miss or something to get the crowd just amped, but they are fired up. Yeah. The Bushwhackers are still fighting a little rougher than what they do later in their WWE run. So I do think this is kind of early for them being there. But, you know, the crowd loves them. They're waving their arms up and down like idiots. Jesse Ventura calls them marching morons.
Mm-hmm.
The crowd is just eating them up. And then the Rougeaus, before the match, hug each other in the ring. An instant booze. Oh my God. Two brothers are hugging each other.
Gay.
This is horrible. This is the worst thing I've ever seen in my life.
They're brothers. Let them alone. What the hell?
Every crowd shot is also filled with mullets. It's beautiful. There's just mullets as far as the eye can see in this crowd. It's insane. It's incredible. And, you know, There's hardly any offense from the Bushwhackers except for biting.
Yeah.
Most of this match is antics, and it's incredibly good. Just the antics. Who cares about technical wrestling or anything?
This is, you know, this is a total cartoon situation. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's a good time. I think, let's see, who actually gets the win? I didn't even write it down.
The Bushwhackers get the win. So what happens is there's some tomfoolery going on. Jimmy Hart hops up on the ring, and like the Bushwhackers end up in the perfect position to hit them all with the battering ram, which is where I think it's Luke puts Butch's head between his arms and then runs at at their opponents. And that's the battering ram, gets the pin, and that's the win. And this match is where we really see, or well, I guess hear, Tony Schiavone being completely outclassed by the heel commentator, Jesse Ventura. Tony Schiavone isn't used to having, like, this kind of commentary. Like, the WCW/Jim Crockett promotions commentary was very much just telling you the story and the action. It's the WWF's commentary is very adversarial. And so there's always, you have the heel commentary and Jesse DiBatti Ventura, and Tony Schiavone is trying to be a face type commentator, and this is not working. He complains that the Rougeaus are double teaming the Bushwhackers a lot, and Jesse Ventura is just like, but you're not complaining when the Bushwhackers do it. That's just part of tag team wrestling. And again, Tony Schiavone is like silent for like 30 seconds after that, because he just
Yeah,
it's not as bad as I think it was SummerSlam, where Tony Schiavone at one point says, you know, you can, they're outside of the ring, they can do whatever they want when they're out there. And Jesse Ventura just says, oh, so if I throw my opponent out of the ring, I can just pull out a gun and shoot him.
That's not what I was saying.
Right. Would that be allowed, Tony?
But let's talk about this.
Yeah. So
that's too funny.
Jesse Ventura and Tony Schiavone are not a good pairing.
No, I mean, Tony's trying his best, but yeah, this is clearly not his. This is not his venue. This is not his crowd. You're right about the crowd in the arena, though. They are fucking like amped for every single part of the show. Honestly, Jackie, my wife was watching with me, and she's like, "Man, she's like, they really got into this more than they do now." I'm like, "Yeah, well, everybody kind of watches it with like ironic detachment now, you know." But then it was, you know, it was serious. Like,
this is real.
Oh my god, so real. Yeah, fun match to start. Goes like 13 minutes. Just kind of, you know. Maybe a little long. Also, very refreshing to see starting with a tag match. You know, we just, you don't get that attention to tag team wrestling anymore. I'm going to just say it one more time. All right. Do we have any promos before the next match? Do you want to talk about?
Yeah, we have a Ted DiBiase promo.
Oh, yeah.
With Mean Gene. And he implies that he's bribed his way to the 30th spot last year. So he had number 30 in the first year. But then he talks that the security around the drawing is quote-unquote Gestapoism.
That's not
and then as the promo winds down, it is revealed that Ted drew the dreaded number one for the Royal Rumble. So he will be the first man in the ring.
He has an absolute star turn in this Royal Rumble, I got to say. We've seen some phenomenal Royal Rumble performances, and this is right up there. The next match is our old buddy Brutus Beefcake, a.k.a. Hulk Hogan Jr., versus the genius Lanny Poffo. The genius, of course, has to start out with some of his doggerel poetry.
Yes, and I have the poem here.
Uh-oh, let's hear it.
Behold the barber, what's his name, with scissors in his hand, intellectually inferior and totally outmanned. He wants to give my genius hairdo an aesthetic augmentation, so I can be the joke of this World Wrestling Federation. All his cuttin' and his struttin' may be quick enough for some, but I'm the world's smartest man, and Beefcake's double dumb.
Wow. Only like cuttin' and struttin' in that whole thing actually rhyme. The rest are all kind of near rhymes. Just saying.
Augmentation and federation. But like, he didn't land the syllables right for them to be the rhymes, but who cares? It's a pretty funny poem. It's an obnoxious as hell gimmick.
Yeah, it's really annoying. He's no Eminem, that's for sure.
No.
His mom's spaghetti. Actually, I kind of enjoyed this one, too. This is another bit of it's kind of a mess. I was, you know, overall, I was really kind of impressed with the the undercard on this thing. I wasn't, you know, you go watch the Royal Rumble, you watch it for the main event, but the rest of the show is actually pretty strong.
This match has your classic homophobia going on, like shadowed homophobia. Like the genius acts a bit effeminate. He prances around the ring some. He's a little light on his toes when he's moving. Mm-hmm. And the crowd doesn't like it. And Brutus, even though I would argue that Beefcake is in slightly, I would say, stereotypical gay outfit with
the fishnets.
White leather and fishnets and cut out gaps, you know. If he's your barber, you would be concerned about how well, how much cut his clothing is.
Also, remember, I don't know where he's billed from here, but they've billed him in the past from San Francisco. And so they're clearly like trying to hint at something. Oh, this guy's a little something or other.
His gimmick is totally like hodgepodge.
Yeah.
Like it's like he's the barber now because he did the haircut at WrestleMania 3 on Adrian Adonis. That's where he picks up the barber name. And before that, he was just kind of a San Francisco swinger, LGBT maybe, you know? And so now you've got an LGBT maybe ultra masculine barber wearing leather and fishnets.
Yeah.
So it's quite the gimmick that he's compiled here.
Well, and before that, when he was, there were Terry and Eddie Boulder, and he was basically Hulk Hogan's little brother.
Right.
I think he was actually billed as Hulk Hogan's little brother, and down to the same kinds of outfits and everything. And then they would bring that back right before his accident, right? Or was that after his accident? When they were kind of dressed, remember when they were sort of on a, what the hell did they call that tag team? You remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah, the accident happens while Hulk and Brutus are tag partners.
Yeah,
and then Brutus disappears, and Brutus actually comes back on Monday Night Raw, on one of the first Monday Night Raws.
Huh.
He comes back and he talks about how he's recovered from his accident. He's ready to go, and then Money Inc. comes out and smashes him in the face, his reconstructed face, with a Halliburton suitcase.
Wow.
And that leads to Hulk Hogan and Brutus versus Money Inc. at that coming up WrestleMania there that happened, I think.
Interesting.
But yeah, anyways, back to this event.
So these guys are both solid workers. I'd say I always kind of enjoyed Leapin'. I liked when he was Leapin' Lanny Poffo. My mom really liked Leapin' Lanny Poffo. I never really knew why. I think it was the leaping.
Maybe.
But this one has a dirty finish. Let's see what happens. He gets the referee's knocked out, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the ref gets knocked out when the genius squirms out of Beefcake's sleeper hold, because that's his finisher like everybody else. And then Mr. Perfect comes out and just starts beating the crap out of Beefcake. And then the ref, you know, sees that happen and rings the bell, but that doesn't stop the
assault.
The assault. But then, you know, the genius still gets some of his hair cut before Perfect could stop that happening too. So like, this is a hair match a bit, because every match with Brutus Beefcake at this point is a hair match. Once you lose the Beefcake and you're out from the sleeper, he then cuts your hair some.
Both Beefcake and the genius get disqualified. Mr. Perfect gets a chair and smacks Beefcake around with it a little bit. Then it's sort of just kind of devolves from there. It was not, wasn't a very auspicious ending, but these things happened in the 90s. It was a rough time.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Are we moving along? Any promos before the next one?
No, I don't think so.
All right. So this one, to me, I'm not to be a spoiler or anything, but this was actually the highlight of the card for me. This is good old Ronnie Garvin, rugged Ronnie Garvin. I don't know which he was going by at this point. Just Ronnie Garvin, I guess. Versus our buddy Greg the Hammer Valentine, who's got Jimmy Hart there with him. This is an old school kind of slobber knocker submission hold.
It doesn't
holds.
Fit in WWF. This match is 10 years in the past.
It's Mid-South all the way,
in a Mid-South smoke-filled firehouse. Like, that's like fire smoke filled wreck hall, like kind of match. And this match is a sleeper match on this show. It comes out of nowhere. You're like, oh well, Ronnie Garvin and Greg the Hammer Valentine. I've never been that much of a Jimmy Garvin fan, but or a Ronnie Garvin fan, but boy, he turned me around on this one.
This is phenomenal. And so he had actually lost a retirement match to Valentine before this. And so he was a referee for a little while, and then they brought him back in, you know, in storyline, of course. But I mean, these guys just go. And there's, like I said, there's lots of reversals. They, you know, of course, Greg's got to get his figure four on several times. He's got that weird shin guard thing that he uses to apply just a little bit of extra pressure on the leg lock to get an advantage. They go back and forth. How long was this thing? It was a good one.
Yeah, six, probably about
16, 17 minutes almost. Yeah.
Ronnie Garvin is one of those guys that just kind of breaks the rules for me a bit. Yeah. So like the closed fist is illegal in professional wrestling, yet it's his finisher.
Sure.
And so, but like it never gains any heat from that. But anyway, it's this match, man. There are some stiff hits in the beginning. Ronnie Garvin definitely must be suffering some sort of brain trauma because he has forgotten that this is a submission match. There's no pins. And I swear to God, in the first like 5 minutes, he goes for like 10 different pins.
Yeah.
And each time the ref is like, no, there's no pins. Get up. And then, I mean, Greg the Hammer Valentine also does it multiple times.
Yeah.
And there's this... Garvin is wearing the figure four blocker, which looks exactly the same as the Hammer's booster. It's kind of weird.
It's Pokemon.
Yeah. Yeah. At one point, he puts Garvin in the figure four, and Garvin is completely no-selling it because he's got that blocker on. And he's just, like, laughing at Greg's face while that's going on.
They really go back, and Garvin is sweating like Springsteen and on this thing. These guys are both just laying it all out. Valentine finally loses this one, right?
So Garvin knocks Valentine out with the shin guard that's been ripped off of him. Greg was going to take the shin guard off of him so that he could get the figure four on him in a full painful way, but Garvin stops him, knocks him out with the loosened shin guard, and then puts him in what they called a reverse figure four, which was a sharpshooter. And Hammer gives up almost immediately, and I just noted that this was the manliest match I've ever seen in my life.
Seriously. I added a bunch of testosterone to my system just watching this match.
Yeah.
I grew hair in places I hadn't before. It was great. It's very exciting. No, this is great. I mean, I've been a fan of Greg the Hammer for a long time. He never quite gets a chance to shine in some of these WWE pay-per-views from back in the day. There's some really phenomenal ones with him and Piper and him and Flair and him and a bunch of other people. But for whatever reason, until, you know, he was a little bit past it by this point, you know, and then they put him in with the Honky Tonk Man, and it was never quite, it's just, you know, it was never quite up to the same kind of level, right? But this is like...
Yeah.
This is a glimmer of the old Greg.
Yeah, this man, he just kept reinventing his career, though, which I thought was this fascinating. Like, you have that old Hammer, the Hammer Valentine thing going, where he's this tough, mean-looking dude, looks like the old lady from the Goonies, just whipping ass, right? Yeah. And then eventually... you know, he's getting beaten down, so let's put him in the tag matches. And so you tag him up with the Honky Tonk Man. Why not? And you dye his hair, and there you go. You got another guy. You got Rhythm and Blues, you know? Yeah, man, he just surprises you constantly. He just pops up, and he's just solid on the card, and he can make anybody work well. And this match... You know, this is as hardcore as the WWF in 1990 is going to get.
Yeah, it's almost like a palate cleanser compared to some of the sort of the cartoony stuff we've just seen, right?
Right. Like, so. They're like, by the way, we can still do real wrestling.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Watch this shit.
Right. So we're going to bring two guys out of the territories. We're going to bring a former NWA champion, and Hammer was probably a Mid-South champion at some point, and throw them in the ring in Orlando for a WWF kids crowd and see where it goes.
See if we can make these children cry.
Pretty much.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, I can't imagine a bunch of little kids caring about either of these guys, right? Like,
no.
You know. The next match, however, is right up their alley. Is there any promos before we get to this one?
Well, yeah. We got the Mr. Perfect promo.
Okay.
With Mean Gene, where he gives a great heel promo where he talks about how Brutus Beefcake takes advantage of his unconscious opponents and violates their privacy by cutting their hair. Like, this is brilliant tactic. Like, Perfect, as a heel, is explaining with perfect legitimacy why he got involved in the Genius's match, and it was to protect his friend.
Yeah, his privacy.
Genius. And his body's sovereignty, you know?
Yeah.
It's very, very woke, you know? But then after that, we have the Brother Love segment in the ring.
Yeah. Oh, Christ. Yeah, I totally blacked this out.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, with where he calls Sensational Sherry down, Tony Schiavone fat shames Brother Love. Yeah, and then
I mean, Sherry, he should be ashamed, honestly. Look at him.
I always wondered if that was makeup that got him that red, or if it was, like, not taking his blood pressure medicine.
It had to be makeup, right?
It has to be. And some help from the light, you know.
Yeah. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No. Sherry comes out. She talks smack about Sapphire. And then Sapphire comes down, and Sapphire loses it and slaps Sherry across the face in a good old stiff old shot. And then Macho Man comes down, and then Dusty Rhodes comes down, and we got a 5-star, 10-alarm, 3-ring circus, all-out brawl. And chaos and drama. And you could always count on Dusty, Sapphire, Macho Man, and Sherry to just bring the insanity and the wild and the crazy to the crowd and to the ring. And, man. And then it ends with Dusty getting his hands on Brother Love.
Yeah.
Which, okay. And Brother Love takes some nasty bumps here for not being a wrestler.
Yeah.
He gets body slammed really hard and then thrown through the ropes out of the ring and lands straight on the floor. Doesn't even, like, slow his fall or anything. It's a nasty looking hit, and boy, Bruce Pritchard has come far.
Yeah, I don't know. Probably the less said the better. I kind of wish it had been blood pressure and he would have stroked out before now, but he's still kicking, so what are you gonna do?
He just got invited to the ring by Triple H, by Cody Rhodes
at that's right
WrestleMania.
That's right.
So and then after that segment, we have Sean Mooney trying to interview Hacksaw Jim Duggan, who just he just talks in all caps.
Yeah.
And he has cross eyes. And I couldn't make sense out of anything that he said until the very end, where he just screams, "Tough guy!"
Yeah.
And takes off. Like, all right.
He loves the USA. He likes saying ho. And he likes to call people tough guy. That's pretty much his whole shtick.
I don't understand his gimmick whatsoever. It's so weird. And it's so weird that for a while, WWF was considering making him the top guy with Hulk Hogan. Like,
he was so popular, though. Like, it's hard to imagine now, like, just how over that guy was. You know, between the 2x4 and the flag and the ho, like, people lost their fucking minds when he came out in the WWF back in the day. He started there in 87, and he went up through, like, the mid 90s before he swapped over to WCW. Yeah. But he was in, was he GCW? No, he was Mid-South. He was kind of a badass.
Yeah.
You know, it was him and Hacksaw Butch Reed, right? Weren't they partners for a while? I
would imagine so.
I feel like I've seen footage of them together. I don't know. And like a tough guy, legit tough guy. Had that football stance thing down from his time playing football. Anyway, it's... So we've got the 2x4 versus the Big Boss Man's nightstick here. And Big Boss Man is managed by Slick, which I don't understand.
Yeah. I mean, Boss Man, you know, so later on, Boss Man's outfit has, it's the Georgia State flag on this thing, because he's from Cobb County. But at this point, it's still just straight up the Confederate battle flag on his arm.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
It's not like the state flag. Like, it's just straight up a Confederate flag. Yeah, and, you know, Hacksaw Jim Duggan has no theme music. And then they're just hitting each other. And it occurred to me in this match that Jim Duggan... John Cena is Jim Duggan.
Hmm.
But just tightened up. So he's in better shape. He is a better wrestler. Right, like he's this a cleaner version of Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Because what is John Cena's gimmick?
He's just a good guy who tries really hard.
He's patriotic. He salutes. Yeah, he's patriotic, a Marine.
Yeah,
you know,
he's not a Marine.
I know he's not a Marine, but it's Hacksaw Jim Duggan. He's Hacksaw Jim Duggan, just, you know, without the 2x4. I bet you Hacksaw Jim Duggan wore jorts a lot.
Yeah, but I guarantee he wore jorts.
Just not in the ring.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, that's my TED talk for today. That
thank you.
John Cena is the reincarnation of Jim Duggan.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, you know, Cena doesn't do a lot of fancy wrestling moves. You know, he has a submission move, and he has a, you know, body drop or whatever or two, but like, yeah, it's mostly
the shoulder tackles.
Yeah, punching and shoulder tackles and jumping on people.
Which is what Jim Duggan does.
Basically what Jim Duggan does, yeah. I think this theory has legs. I think we can get this into print.
Yeah, let's do it. I'm sure some journal will pick us up.
This is really just, again, just a sort of slobber knocker kind of thing. They're just wailing on each other. There's some good back and forth. Slick slides the nightstick to Boss Man. And then Boss Man hits Duggan with the nightstick and just gets disqualified by the ref, so Duggan gets the win here. A kind of messy fitting end to a messy match.
It's a second disqualification on this card.
I know. Four matches. We've had four matches. Two disqualifications.
Yeah, and then Duggan comes back with his 2x4 and clears the ring. And I still don't understand Jim Duggan.
That was his thing, man. He comes around and smacks on the ropes with that 2x4. Everybody just dives for cover.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I love him.
Yeah,
he's great. I just don't get him. I can just...
man. All right, it's time for the main event, and my favorite part of the main event is every wrestler getting the, like, 20-second thing to say why they're the best and why they're going to win the Royal Rumble. And they're, like, they're just perfect capsules of these wrestlers' personalities, you know? Like, they would be their, like, cutscene if this were the video game, you know? Like,
yeah.
So they just roll on through. I didn't write them all down, but they're come fast and furious, and it's phenomenal.
I just marked down the ones that the things I found most interesting out of them.
Okay.
So first, Bad News Brown has the best line of the entire event, where he calls everybody beer-bellied sharecroppers.
Love it.
Genius line.
Love it. Love it.
And then he just says everybody wants to prove themselves. We have a interview with the Rockers real quick, and so it's very clear at this point still that Marty Jannetty is the better talker between him and Shawn Michaels, but Shawn Michaels is the better wrestler. Hercules says, I'm going to win the Rumble Royal. Good job, Hercules.
You had one job.
Yeah. Tito Santana has a t-shirt on that is his cartoon character from the 80s WWF cartoon, and it is incredible. Jimmy Snuka talks about swimming with sharks in the islands, so cool. We got nice stereotypes there. And then we get blessed with an Ultimate Warrior promo at the end, where there's several things that he says in this one that's outrageous. And he says, the power of the Ultimate Warrior has spread like a virus in the WWF. And he also references Parts Unknown as a proper noun, as if it's the name of a place.
Yeah, that's funny. Because
he is from Parts Unknown. So he literally says the buildings don't compare to the buildings of Parts Unknown.
Wait.
As if it's a place that you can go.
And they have buildings there.
And they have buildings there.
That's amazing. I love that so much. Do they have a post office in Parts Unknown?
I hope so. Their zip code has letters in it or something.
Do they have a Panera?
The Parts Unknown Panera. They have a TGI Fridays right next to it. They have a little restaurant park.
Yeah.
One of those restaurant parks. Or there's a TGI Fridays. There's an Applebee's. There's the Panera. And
Chili's. It's got to be a Chili's.
And a Bob Evans. A Bob Evans, too. Man. You know, you got to have those.
Oh, yeah. I do like their gravy. Their pancakes are good, too. Shout out to Bob Evans for holding it down. Have you ever been to Bob Evans, like, in the middle of a weekday? It's like, you think you're at the Shady Acres retirement home. Like, the dining room is like, the median age is like 78. Like, I went to the one in Bowie one time. I took the day off and I'm like, I'm going to go get some fucking pancakes for my day off. It was great. Like, I literally heard a guy say something about kids today, blah, blah, blah. And nobody knew how to turn their cell phone ringer off when it would go off at peak volume. Everybody was just being awful to the waiters and waitresses. It was quite the experience.
Bob Evans in Catonsville, which was probably the last time I was able to eat at one. That was like the last restaurant in the area to still have a smoking section.
Yes. Yes. Nice.
And there would be nobody in it.
Right.
And so we would just ask to sit in a smoking section. We would get a table immediately on like Sunday mornings.
Nice.
Genius maneuvers.
Where my parents in York, the Wiener World was like one of the last restaurants to get rid of their smoking section. that place was lit. So
I used to dance at a place called the Wiener World.
Wait a minute. That's different.
Wait. Okay. It's a different one. Okay.
It was only a smoking section when you were there. Am I right?
Oh yeah.
Hubba hubba. Yeah. David, no, those little...
Behold my helicopter.
Those little capsule promos are great. It's like, I feel like every acting student should actually watch those. Like, here's how you set up a character and sell it in, like, literally 20 seconds. Amazing.
Yeah, they should show them at, like, Stanislav acting school or whatever it is. Those only other things that I noticed was that like Bret Hart had silver glasses, and I was like, where the hell can I get silver Bret Hart glasses? I need those. And Hulk Hogan had probably one of the most tame promos in the whole thing. He just talked about the power of his pythons. Okay, yeah. That's every day out of you. Give me something special, like the buildings of Parts Unknown. Like, this is why people love the Ultimate Warrior so much so quickly, is because he was psychotic.
Yeah.
That came out of his
mouth. You never knew what that guy was going to say. So, no. I mean, it's a shame I'm not into model railroads. I would totally start building a town called Parts Unknown, and I would have have like the last train to Parts Unknown. Man, that'd be a good country song.
It's almost like an episodic podcast. Like title, like Welcome to Parts Unknown, just like that Welcome to Night Vale or whatever it was. That was all the rage with the nerds a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah. Sorry, now for like, the Royal Rumble match.
Yeah, I feel like we're getting distracted. Well, as we mentioned, good old Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man, comes out first. He's not too happy about it. He looks phenomenal. Virgil's with him. Buddy Coco Beware is there for number two.
Yes, and this is right up. Jesse Ventura openly admits that black wrestlers cannot have head injuries.
Wow.
He straight up says it. You're wasting your time trying to hurt Coco by banging his head on things. He straight up says it.
You're not supposed to just admit it, Jesse. Like, that's always just kind of been implied. Junkyard Dog and Ronnie. The dude that I just mentioned. Butch Reed. You know, they always... anyway.
If you're not white, your head is impenetrable.
Hashtag diversity. Marty Jannetty comes out. I don't know if he took his cocaine with him or if it's in the locker room. Nobody's going out yet. We're still on the third guy. Let's see. Jake the Snake comes in. He is Sans Snake, so he's obviously at a disadvantage already. He and DiBiase go at each other like right away because they do not like each other at all.
Yeah, because Ted DiBiase sends Coco and Jannetty out almost immediately, and we're stuck with these moments where Ted DiBiase is just hanging out in the ring alone, and then suddenly that sexy music hits for number four, and my God, a huge pop for Jake the Snake.
Yeah.
He is a face at this time, and boy, man.
Yeah, he's over. I always think of him as a smaller guy, but he's huge. Like he's
a big guy.
Yeah, he's probably 6'4", 6'5", easily. Randy Savage is up next, looking just phenomenal. Sherry comes with him and then proceeds to spend the next, I don't know, 10 minutes, however long she's out there, just shrieking at the absolute top of her lungs. She's on the other side of the ring from where the announcers are, and you can hear her over that crowd, which is, again, made up of screaming children. She's going nuts. She's yelling at people. She's calling attention. She's distracting the ref. She's a fucking superstar. Love her.
Yeah, this is an amazing moment because number six is Rowdy Roddy Piper. Yeah. So, and I was like, how are they putting all these big names in so early in this Royal Rumble? Like, what are they doing? And like, it just pushes the crowd to like near breaking point.
Yeah.
And then they just like neutralize the chemical reaction by bringing the Warlord down at number seven. it's the Warlord.
It's kind of like a DJ set list, right? You got to bring the crowd up and then bring them down and bring them up and bring them down, you know? So you go like quick hits with Jake Roberts, Randy Savage, Roddy Piper. All right, let's chill it out with the Warlord. And then we start going back up with Bret Hart, Bad News Brown, is a personal favorite of mine, and then Dusty Rhodes. And then, of course... Ooh. Man,
Dusty coming down, man. That crowd creams itself.
He starts throwing atomic elbows almost immediately. He looks great. Even in the polka dot gimmick, he looks great. And then we get Andre, who looks awful. Like, this is he died the next year, I think.
No, he's got a couple more 90, years in him.
Okay. For some reason, I thought it was 91. I think you're right. It's... 93.
I mean, he's definitely 93. He's near the end of his career already at this point. Yeah. His health is catching up with him. So he lumbers down to the ring. But I mean, Andre is still doing some amazing feats of strength.
Yeah.
this Royal Rumble, we're already at pretty much the most people that are going to be in the ring at any point in this Royal Rumble, too.
Yeah.
People are constantly coming and going through this entire match. It's not at no point you get like 20 people all clustered in the ring like you do in later Royal Rumbles. This actually looks more like a modern day Royal Rumble, but they actually just eliminate people instead of just having people go lay down in the corner and stuff like that they do these days. I don't want to be out of the match, but like I'm not supposed to be involved in the action right now.
Yeah, I'm just going to go here and hang out. I brought my Kindle.
Right. They might as well just pull their cell phone out. Andre tosses the Warlord out with one hand, like just palms him and pushes him over the top rope and throws him. Like it's Andre still got some strength in him. And Dusty and Piper gang up on Andre. And then we got the Red Rooster, Terry Taylor, coming out in number 12.
Yeah, talking about cooling out the crowd a little bit.
Yeah.
Good old Terry Taylor.
He just couldn't make that work.
Oh, my God. I don't know that anybody could have made that gimmick work. Like,
yeah.
But the Red Rooster effectively killed Terry Taylor's career. And then we get Axe and Haku and Smash.
Yeah, we have some shenanigans with Piper and Bad News as well.
So, yeah.
Piper backdrops Bad News Brown over the top rope, and then Bad News reaches back in and pulls Piper out over the top rope, a la Hulk Hogan, Sid Vicious. And this sets up their infamous match at WrestleMania as well.
Yeah.
And the half blackface.
I was going to say, AKA the one with back blackface.
That Peacock and WWE has removed that promo now from what the footage of WrestleMania. And then Andre sends the Rooster out. Yeah. And then we got Axe coming down from Demolition, and he pounds Andre into the ground. Like, it's impressive and just an incredible spot in this thing. Like, it shows you how much they're about to push Demolition through the roof.
They're old traveling buddies, fellow machines from the machine days. Axe has some funny stories about traveling with Andre in Japan, especially, and trying to catch taxis because they wouldn't stop for Andre. So he would like hide around the corner, and then Axe would go out and flag down the taxi. And then when they'd pull over, he'd be like, okay, here, my friend's coming too. And then Andre would come out, and the taxi driver's like, oh no, but it was too late by that point. Yeah. So, yeah, I think they were good buddies. Yeah. Haku is here. He's one of Bobby Heenan's guys at this point. I love that guy.
Yep.
His kid showed up on, WWE just a week or so ago.
Yeah, so it's exciting.
Kind of excited. That guy is a unit.
And you have a great weasel chant from the crowd, too, at this point. It's very loud, very clear, very organized. Like, they have a conductor or something happening for it.
Yeah,
it's great. And then Andre gets tied up in the ropes, and Axe and Dusty just pound away on Andre some more. And then at 14, we got Haku rolling out. At this point, I actually noted that like they need to start getting some people to stay in the ring for a while so that we have some action happening, because like we're still only at, like, you know, we're not hitting all the eliminations, but still, like, there's still only like four or five people in the ring at a time through the rest of this match.
So Smash comes out next at number 15, and then so Demolition kind of team up on the Colossal Connection, which is what Haku and Andre, right? Dusty dumps Brett. Akeem the Dream comes in. Demolition takes out both Haku and then Andre, I think. Nope, they take Andre, and then they try to go back for Haku, but they don't quite get it.
They do an amazing thing where they just both run with a shoulder tackle at Andre, and they slam into Andre, and Andre goes barreling over the top rope and lets out this amazing as he goes over the top. That is just so incredible and so like terrifying, and gets the crowd pulled right back into this match, because the crowd was starting to cool off a little bit. Yeah. But then when you see Andre the Giant scream and go flying the way he did, it's it brings you right back in.
That was a phenomenal impression. Hello, pretty lady.
Would you like a peanut? And then that's when you realize that Ted DiBiase is still hanging out in this match. Like 30 minutes in now.
He's looking wiped. He ducks an elimination attempt by Demolition. Jimmy Superfly Snuka comes in. Snuka takes out Akeem. Here comes Dino Bravo. They're still pushing the World's Strongest Man thing after they did a weightlifting gimmick with Dino. Oh, and here comes our buddy Earthquake. He's being billed as the Canadian.
Comes down after him.
Yeah, the Canadian Earthquake. which I love.
Mr. Tenta.
What a guy. Have you watched The Dark Side on him yet? I really want
to
watch
it. I haven't had a chance to, no.
Yeah. I want to watch it, but I'm worried it'll just make me sad.
That's been the general theme that I've been getting, that it's just sad.
Yeah.
Because he's like the most liked and lovable guy that just has shit happen to him.
Yeah.
But Earthquake does some impressive stuff here. He tosses Dusty Rhodes over the top rope, and then he picks up Axe like he's nothing and throws Axe over the top rope. And now Axe, Bill Eadie, is a big dude, and Earthquake just makes him look like an action figure. And at one point, Dino and Earthquake hit the ropes at the same time. And I'm like, oh, boy. Oh,
gonna
no.
Going to tip the ring over.
You're going to snap those ropes or something, man. That was scary. And then at number 20, Jim Neidhart comes running down and goes for Earthquake. And then five folks come together and, like, rugby scrum push Earthquake over the top rope. And where, like, the lines between face and heel get blurred because you're not winning this Royal Rumble unless Earthquake is not in it. So they all came together and pushed him out. And then the crowd is hyped over Earthquake getting pushed out. And then that Ultimate Warrior cymbal crash guitar lick hits. And, oh my God, the crowd goes wild. And Ultimate Warrior runs down like a maniac and sends Dino Bravo out immediately.
Yeah, he's going nuts. He's bouncing off the walls like a toddler who's been just mainlining pixie sticks and black coffee. And Rick Martel comes in at 22. Let's see, Tito Santana comes at 23 and goes right after Martel. This is, must be after their breakup, right?
Right after their breakup, yeah. And then Honky Tonk Man at 24. And then there's like a big surge, just like the crowd of people in the ring just kind of like moves, and suddenly Jim Neidhart goes flying out of the ring from this. It's kind of a weird looking thing. And then Ultimate Warrior finally sends Ted DiBiase out after 44 minutes.
Man,
he lasted 44 minutes and 47 seconds. And that at the time, and it stands for quite for a couple years, is the record for how long a person lasts until I believe Ric Flair wins the Rumble in 92. From the number three spot.
Very nice. Let's see who's Santana's still working on Martel. The Warrior takes Santana out. Hogan
comes down at number 25.
Yeah.
And he sends Jimmy Snuka out immediately, like his former best friend.
Yeah, his
like,
buddy.
Like around WrestleMania 1, Snuka and Hogan are like 1 and 2. They are best buds forever at that point. But nah.
If you watch the cartoon, the old cartoon, they were like the two main guys on the face side, you know?
Yeah.
So then Shawn Michaels comes in looking very out of place. And then this is the moment everybody's been waiting for, is Hogan and Warrior are sort of facing off. They're smashing into each other a little bit. And then they get kind of distracted by Barbarian coming in and then ravishing Rick Rude.
Yeah, at that point, though, is when Hulk Hogan screws Ultimate Warrior over. Warrior is trying to push someone over the top rope, and Hogan, I think it's the Barbarian possibly, and Hulk tries to send Barbarian too, but ends up sending Warrior, and Barbarian stays in the ring. Like, Hulk Hogan is just like a shark rolling his eyes back, throwing people over the top rope, because that's what Hulk Hogan does in these things. And obviously, people wanted Hulk Hogan and Ultimate Warrior to be besties, and, well, Warrior is pissed at Hulk now.
Yeah.
Because Hulk Hogan just screwed him out of winning the Royal Rumble. So, we have Hulk Hogan screwing over the biggest face in the company again.
And of course, setting up their eventual collision course at WrestleMania 6, just a couple of months down the road.
Hogan and Warrior also look like they're just, when they're in the ring together, they look like they're just two like cocks strutting around the ring. And they start bumping their chests, and then they do the dumbest thing in all of pro wrestling, and I've only really seen it done in WWF, and that is the crisscross. The
crisscross.
opponent. So if the ring is a compass, one person starts bouncing off the ropes east to west, running on their own power, and the other person starts running north south, bouncing off the ropes, and they're crossing paths with each other, but never colliding. And the crowd goes nuts.
Yeah, I didn't understand that bit at all.
I don't understand it. Like, Hogan just looks like a rabid animal, just like snarling, and like he's got his jowls going with the sweaty mustache, and like Ultimate Warrior is like flexing, and like his face paint is melting, and then they just start running off the rope. Okay.
Yeah. It's really dumb. It's dumber than it sounds, actually, and it sounds pretty fucking dumb.
Yeah. they have Hercules and Mr. Perfect at number 29 and 30 coming out. And it's this, you have a bunch of mid-carders come out after Hulk Hogan comes out. It's just kind of a weird thing. Yeah, and eventually, you know, we get down to it just being Perfect and Hulk Hogan, and you know where that's going.
Yep. So the final five are Hogan, Rick Rude, the Barbarian, Hercules, and Perfect.
It's just like you hear those names, and you're like, which one of these is going to win?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I wonder.
I wonder. Rude and Perfect try to double-team Hogan, but Hogan gets the better of him. And then we get just an interminable amount of Hulk Hogan parading around with his banner and his pythons.
Real American. He also sends Perfect over the top rope in the corner, like over top of the ring post. Like it's a very definitive elimination. And Perfect, in his traditional way, kind of oversells it, which works with Hulk Hogan, makes Hulk Hogan look even better.
Yeah.
The ending of this Rumble's kind of after the crisscross, I was just kind of like,
yeah. It's a little underwhelming. This one had
potential.
Yeah.
This one had potential. But then, like you said, when you're faced with these last five guys, and I'm like, I wonder who's going to win this one.
Yeah, it's a really fun one to watch. Just again, just because of the sheer volume of super famous talent in the ring at any one time. You know, when you're like sitting there watching this, and you've got Macho Man and Jake the Snake and Demolition and Piper and you know, all these guys, like, it's just, it's kind of unbelievable. It just seems like, I don't know, it's an embarrassment of riches for this particular time period, so.
How many of these folks are in the Hall of Fame? Like, it's ridiculous. Andre the Giant.
Oh, yeah, of course. Jake Roberts, Randy Savage, Roddy Piper.
Jimmy Snuka.
Brett Dusty.
Jesse Ventura on commentary. Tito Santana's in the Hall of Fame.
Demolition are still not in. Bullshit.
Yeah, that is total bullshit. See, Sensational Sherry's in there.
Yep.
Mr. Perfect. Coco Beware is in there. Like, everybody. It's Million Dollar Man. Jim Duggan. It's really, really incredible. Like, how many... Jake Roberts is in the Hall of Fame. Macho Man, like you said. It's ridiculous. So this, you can't deny the star power of this Royal Rumble. It would have been nice to see Hulk Hogan not win, but at the time period, of course, Hulk Hogan's going to win.
Yeah, that's not what we were doing at this time.
So everybody came to see Hulk Hogan win, and that's what he does.
100%. Shout out to Nick for the recommendation. If you have a show you want us to watch and review, you can find us on the interwebs at thewrestlingarchives.com. Our email address is on there. You, of course, can find us on all the social medias. You can send us messages that way. We love to hear from you. We love to hear what you think about the Royal Rumble 1990, or if you have another Royal Rumble that's maybe your favorite. Maybe you think we missed the mark on this one. You can tell us why we're wrong and why this one sucks. We like that, too. We will literally take any mail you want to send our way. We are very lonely.
Yeah, so what was your favorite match on this card?
It's got to be Valentine and Ronnie Garvin. Like, that was it's such a throwback, and it's so intensely out of place, and it's also just so entertaining on here. How about you?
I think I'm in agreement with you on that. Yeah. I mean, the Royal Rumble match is a very good match.
It is.
I kind of like that it didn't get quite as crowded, because then you could see the action, and there were always people being eliminated and people coming in. So there was no downtime for an hour plus long match.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive. But yeah, I think Greg Valentine, Ronnie Garvin is a sleeper that's hiding on this card that people should go out and seek out, to watch. It's old school to the max.
I don't know that there's really a worst match. I mean, I feel like the Jim Duggan and Boss Man is probably the most pointless, probably.
That's where I was going to go with my worst match.
Yeah. My oh shit moment is probably the six guys piling on poor Earthquake to try to take him out over the top. Like
that does also an amazing amount of push for him. Like that's how you got him some real good heat by yeah. It takes like five dudes to lift him out of the ring and get him out. And then barely after Andre the Giant got sent flying by two dudes. So yeah. you've built him up big time by just giving him that much clearance and that much sway to be eliminated from the match. My oh shit moment probably was Bad News Brown saying beer belly sharecroppers. that made me openly laugh and say oh shit. So I think that's going to be my oh shit moment.
I miss that guy. He was fantastic. I follow his social media. It's run by one of his kids, and they're always sharing pictures of their dad from back in the day. Just, you know, somebody just traveled like all up and down the East Coast from Canada and New York to Florida and back again. you know, a legit world champion in judo, Olympic silver medalist, Alan Coag, Coage, is how you spell his name. Just, I think, a somewhat forgotten, underappreciated talent. So it's always it's always a treat when we get to see him on these shows. So.
Yeah, you don't hear a lot of people talking about him being a shooter, but he's totally a shooter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There's still some real shooters in the WWF at this point, too, with Haku and Bad News. He was a talented dude, and it's. I always enjoyed watching him work when he does pop up on these shows.
I'd like to just take a moment to pay tribute to the men and women we've seen on this event who are no longer with us. So our in memoriam section for Royal Rumble 1990 from January 21st, 1990 in Orlando, Florida includes Mean Gene Okerlund, Howard Finkel, referee Joey Morella, Lanny Poffo, the genius, Bushwhacker Butch, the big boss man, Macho Man Randy Savage, sensational Sherry Martel, Virgil, who just passed a few weeks back, Rowdy Rowdy Piper, Bad News Brown, Dusty Rhodes, his partner Sapphire, Juanita Wright, Andre the Giant, Bobby the Brain Heenan, Superfly Jimmy Snuka, Dino Bravo, the Earthquake / the Canadian Earthquake, Jim the Anvil Neidhart, the Ultimate Warrior, Ravishing Rick Rude, Hercules, Mr. Perfect, and Mr. Fuji. Forget anybody? It's quite a list.
I don't think so.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks again for listening. We've got some more shows coming up. We'll talk about wrestling old and new. We'll continue our trek through WrestleMania's past and present. We'll watch some more old school stuff. Maybe we'll watch the No Holds Barred show. That'd be a good one.
Maybe watch the movie with it.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one. Anyway.
What's that smell? Dookie.
There's your preview clip for this week. We don't do this anymore. But, all right. So we're going to wrap up for today. Thanks for listening, everybody. My name is Tim.
And I'm Rich. I almost forgot to say my name.
That's all right. And we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.